Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome. Good morning. Well, winter has come with a vengeance. It was minus one this morning in Johannesburg. It'll warm up a little later, but only going up to about 15 or 16. So please, please dress warm. And I'm sure we're all very, very upset about what's happening in Cape Town, in Knysna, the fires, the floods, etc. And of course, if you want to donate blankets, there is in Cape Town, they have set up a depot there. You contact the Board of Deputies in Cape Town, they'll let you know. And of course, this morning we have in the studio again Dr. Jonathan Mach. Welcome, Jonathan. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. I had a 2-week break. Shavuot was great. It was wonderful. Just today, in modern technology, I'd like to share it with you is, I've been working on this personal brain management idea, and I've had software engineers developing what they call an app, a mobile application, like Facebook and whatever. And I just got good news now that it's available in the Google Store. So it's just a tiny step for mankind, but a big step for what I'm trying to do is to help people improve their brain health so they can increase performance and also delay disease. Maybe just to share that Gibbs, the Gordon Institute of Business Science, has invited me to give a talk on Monday for 2 hours to all their students, their MBAs, their PhDs, on this concept of brain health. So it is picking up, and if you link it to our show, we do have brain stretches, me and you. Not so much you, because it's automatic with you, but memory and recalling and talking about traditions is a wonderful way to keep your brain active, you know, and keep exercising your brain. So I look forward to continuing with these concepts of traditions. And as you and I know, we are getting some nice emails on people commenting. And I would like to suggest that people should WhatsApp or phone in on whatever tradition, Jewish tradition that is, you would like to discuss or contribute.
Yes.
Because there's many, and we're not going to cover them all, but if the listeners do pick up one or two or three or four, share them, and I'm sure we'll have some comment on them.
Yeah, and of course, we're going to continue. I'm sure many of you remember last week I had in the studio Leon Gershlovitz, and he spoke about all of the Yekka community and how the word Yekka became about.
How did that come about?
You know, that in the Parsha Kiti say, they refer to a stiff-necked person.
Yes.
And or people, stiff-necked people.
Yep.
And that, if you look at the Hebrew of that, and you do and it's an acronym, it gives you the word Yekka. And that's where the German Jews are known as a stiff-necked community, because they were very, very strict in their minagim, in their davening and everything. For example, he mentioned that when we say, like the ordinary people, we say slichas, we start on a Saturday evening, right about midnight, for about an hour or so, and then we go through the 10 days before Rosh Hashanah. In the mornings, we say it for about 15, 20 minutes. He says they start at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they go through for about 2 or 3 hours saying slichas.
Yes, I think from a neuropsychological point of view, I wonder where their minds are. So I think it's that grit. You know, there's a wonderful book by Professor Duckworth on what she's from Harvard, I think, and her book's very influential, her work's very influential, her research is influential. It's that the differentiator between success and failure is grit. You know, just waking up at 5 o'clock, you know, every morning to say slichas for 3 hours. I don't think it's a slichas. I think it's just the getting up and just standing and just getting through page after page. And that may be, you know, determine some kind of stiff neck.
Yes.
That you stick to it, and it just confirms it's habit formation. But once again, I rather spend 5 minutes if I put with my eyes closed and just reflect back on the day on where I can improve, you know, and build up that ability to reflect and maybe change my behavior. I really don't believe. I mean, maybe in the higher levels, you know, it is highly metaphysical and in Shemayim there is reward. But at a deep psychological point, I think just a few minutes every day of the year is required just to reflect.
And you know, and then of course the Sephardim, we start a week before Rosh Hashanah.
Yes.
The Sephardim start right at the beginning of the month.
Yes.
The moment it's the month of Elul, then they start to say Slichas.
Yes, and Chabad, I think, a little bit later. I think they probably, we should join them. If you don't like Slichas, join them. I think I'm open to correction. Chabad don't have it as long as, certainly not long as the Sephardim.
Yes.
And I think they have it ready between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I'm open to correction, but so there is this tradition that the different groupings, Slichas is not every day, you know, for half an hour for the month of Elul. In fact, it's from Elul till Yom Kippur, so it's 40 days.
Yeah, 40 days,
okay,
yes.
Besides Sabbat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, also I've been told, amongst some of the Yekas, a lot of them don't wear a kippah, a yarmulke, if they're in a building where there's a cover over. You know, they don't necessarily go out and put on the kippah. And that is also an odd, I call it an odd tradition, because I've seen all of them, most of them that I know, are keeping, wear the kippah all the time.
Yeah, but the kippot, I think, now is much more common. And it's, you know, and it's not just a kippah that, I think even the Yekas and others wear caps or...
Yes.
What these call baseball caps. A lot of the youngsters wear them, hats. But when I was at Barra Gwynedd, there were some very from what you call very orthodox Jewish senior doctors who did not cover the hair. And so when I saw them, like in Yovel, whatever, their head was covered. And I think maybe, I don't know, whether they're scared of anti-Semitism or... Because a kippah, covering your head, and we're talking about men now, of course, it's a sign. It's a sign that you are Shomer Mitzvahs and Shomer, and you're God fearing as good as that can go. It's a very powerful sign. If you just shift just for a moment, women also cover their hair. It's a very emotional issue for them. But for marriage, many of them are doing it now, and certainly when they come into shul, They put some kind of covering.
Right.
It's not essential. This is a minhag, covering the hair.
Minhag.
It's not that there's a derisa from the Torah, you will cover your hair.
No, it's a minhag.
Your head, I'm talking about, let's say, mena. Yeah.
Now, let me give you another minhag with the German, the Yekas, and with us as well. A boy becomes bar mitzvah and he puts on a talis for the first time when he says the brochas and he does his haftorah, his mafta, etc. But then afterwards they don't wear a talis until they get married, and then, you know, the color presents the chosan with the talis. But the yekas, the bar mitzvah boy afterwards, continues to wear a talis.
I think the yekah boys wear talis even before bar mitzvah.
Even before, yes.
You know, and afterwards, I think they continue. So they wear talis, I think, I don't know from what age, but of course, there is this minhag now that a boy a month before bar mitzvah starts to put on tefillin.
Tefillin, yeah.
So I haven't seen anybody, I'm open to correction once again, of any minhag where the boys put on tefillin from much earlier. I remember Rob Kerstak said they only start a month before to get the chinuch.
Yes.
So when it actually comes to the bar mitzvah, they can do it. But also there needs to be control of bowels and that kind of stuff. And they think that's only really just before bar mitzvah.
But as I said, the talis, then they wear right through until
married. If you go to the Yekashul, you'll see the kids, the
all
boys,
wearing talis. We're taking an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So if you just tuned in, we'd continue to talk all about the different minagim traditions, and I just want to divert now, and I was speaking to Jonathan before we came in also about superstition, which is very, very important. And you know, in Judaism And I've spoken about this a few years ago. There is no such thing as superstition. We don't believe in superstition.
How do you understand the concept of superstition? What is superstition?
Well, a lot of people, for example, won't walk under a ladder.
Now, those are examples.
Yes.
But what? How do you understand superstition? I mean, people touch a mezuzah, let's say. Okay, that's an example.
Yes.
You know, and they kiss it. But what is a superstition? Is it...
Is there something that you fear, you're scared of, you're afraid of?
If you don't do something, then might something, yeah.
Or you do something which you shouldn't do something.
It doesn't make logic. There's correct. No logic. So in psychiatry, you call this obsessive-compulsive disorder. The obsession is the thought, and the compulsion is the action. So if you fear germs, that's the thought, obsession. The compulsion is to wash your hands. And these people can get so bad that they actually scrape their skin. And I've had patients who for hours would wash their hands. And it's not their personality, it's not a moral thing, it's a neuroanatomical problem.
Right.
So if we define it, I think from a psychiatric point of view, we'll talk illogical, obsessive, compulsive behavior.
Right. Let me give you another example. Friday the 13th.
Right.
A lot of people will not get out of bed, will not venture out of the house. They're afraid of Friday the 13th.
Yes.
You know, that something's going to happen, the end of the world, or there's going to be a disaster or something like that.
Yes.
And that is exactly what you've just mentioned now. It's an obsession.
Yes. Yes. And it starts off with a thought and a fear.
Correct.
You know, I don't know if you want to open up, but why people don't walk under a stepladder or touch wood.
Touch wood, yes.
These are not Jewish concepts. These are actually Christian concepts, which is probably taken from the medieval days where there was a lot of superstition. And it's often through ignorance is these superstitions. But I think we have to divide between superstitions and
some of
our actions.
Yes.
Well, what about kaporos? You know, the swinging of the chickens on Erev Yom Kippur.
I mean,
they're some of our brightest, our finest and our brightest rabbonim, they do kaporos. I could never swing a chicken around my head and believe that that's going to take my sins away. Or tashlich.
Tashlich. You throw the breadcrumbs into the water and the fish is going to swallow all that.
Now, isn't just from, I know we're getting into difficult areas here, but I don't think we can let us Jewish people off the hook too quick. Yes, we don't believe in superstition, is it? But we often do things. If we do this, then that might happen. If we don't do that, then that's going to happen. You know what I mean? So we see this in sports people. There's a lot of cricketers, I know, professional cricketers, when they go into bat, they have rituals that if they don't do it. But I think that's to manage the anxiety. So if we go back to obsessive compulsive disorder, what is it? It's really an anxiety disorder. It's a worry. And if you do it, you tend to dampen your worry. If you don't do it, then you keep worrying. You know, and there are these people that keep checking. So I've had a couple of patients, let's say, that they became dysfunctional about this because they would leave the home and did I put off the stove? Then go back. Or did I close the door? So sometimes I have people that 10 times at the night, did I really close the kitchen door? Did I lock it? And so that would be in psychiatry. But I think you're talking more about almost religious, social type of actions that people do, thinking that if they do that, something's going to happen after that.
Yes. So if you want to comment, please text 34519 or you can phone in on 074-654-7335. If you know of any, let's call it superstitions, why don't you open lots of people don't open an umbrella in a house. They won't open.
Yes. Now, where does that come from?
Well, let's see if any of our listeners know. Why don't you open an umbrella in the house? And as we mentioned earlier about the ladder, you don't walk under ladder. And that, of course, is a Christian concept which came about. And touching wood, you know, that was when Lahavdil, when Jesus was walking along with a cross, and people would touch it.
Mm.
And then a lot of people today, well, you know, touch wood, this shouldn't happen, or thank God, touch wood, this. And of course, we've done away with that. And then another one, remember when the old days when you went to a bar mitzvah or a wedding, and they would propose a toast. Everybody would stand up and take their glasses and sing hippie puree, hippie puree. Of course, that's done away with because today we're saying that. But where does that come from? It comes from the Arch of Titus in Rome.
Oh, yes.
And on the Arch of Titus in Rome is engraved the following words, hip. And it means Jerusalem, Jerusalem esperidatum. Jerusalem is destroyed.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's where you got hep, hep, hooray, hep, hep, hooray. That's where it came from. Jerusalem is destroyed.
Yes, you know, the it's very interesting. I think people have even said that at the concentration camps. But I think that might be the legend that has been misappropriated. But, you know, if you go to I go to a kosher restaurant, and often there's a birthday party there. And then the staff bring out a cake or whatever, and they go, happy birthday, you know,
Jesus.
Whatever. And then some of them go hip hip, which is terrible. And I've actually been to the management and the waiters, and I just said, please don't do that hip hip. They say yeah yeah. What do they say?
Head out.
Yeah.
As I said, hip hip, hip,
hip is
Jerusalem esperidatum.
Yes.
Jerusalem is destroyed. And there's another thing that which is not Jewish.
Yes.
And that they, when they have a birthday cake, say the baby or whatever it is 10 years old, put on 10 candles and they blow out 10 candles. That's not a Jewish concept. You don't blow out any candles. You don't even have candles on a cake. That's not a Jewish tradition at all.
Okay, you don't blow it, but
you don't have even
candles.
But
you can. I've seen this on Hanukkah.
Hanukkah is a different story.
Yes.
Hanukkah,
let's say in shul.
Yes.
So sometimes I've seen, for safety's sake, is that after they make the broch and after Maariv, they just like squeeze
the thing. Squeeze it, yeah.
But blowing out is not a Jewish, it's because the candle is, or now we're talking about another tradition.
Yes.
Candles in the light, which was central to women and lighting candles every Friday night and on Yom Tov, and of course for, when you go to your site.
Yes.
So a candle is extremely central to our traditions. How do you read the candle, the flame? Because, you know, there's some beautiful works on this, if I can remember, is that the flame reaches out.
Correct.
It reaches out to.
Right.
And there's always a wick, and it draws on an energy source.
Yes. You know. But, you know, with one candle,
yes,
from the one little flame,
right,
you can make a complete fire. You didn't have to, you know, just one little touch on that flame. You can light another one, another one. And it doesn't extinguish itself. It doesn't go out.
Yes. Also, that if you got a candle and you light my candle and I light another one, you lose nothing from it.
You're correct. You lose nothing.
Yeah, but you light up. You light up. So if 100 people light up the candles, which started with yours, you can light up this room, in a beautiful way. So it's a very there's many aspects to this.
And you know that if you know the chemistry of a flame,
yes,
there's the yellow on the outside and the blue in the inside, which is the hottest of the flame is the blue. And you know who? There's a whole thesis on the chemistry of a flame on fire by you know who? Maimonides, the Rambam.
Yes.
That's in the 11th century, going back so long there. He was such a brilliant scholar. He knew the whole chemistry of the flame, how it came about. And, you know, I've seen another tradition. A lot of women, when they light a candles on a Friday night, okay, you've got to strike a match.
Yes.
They won't blow out the match. They just move it around so it'll go out by itself.
I don't think you mentioned Shabbos tonight.
Yes.
What's the parsha's name?
It's the parsha Pahalosacha.
What's it? Does it mean?
All about lighting the menorah.
Yes, yes, in the Beis HaMikdash.
In the Beis HaMikdash.
And also in the Midbar. So, yep. So it was one of the greatest honors to light to clear up the ash.
To light the mikvah. Mm. And it was all one flame.
Yes.
It was all. And if you looked at it, it looked as one flame. It wasn't seven different flames. and the one that lit it. And then, of course, when you take the other type of the other tradition, where you have the lighting of Hanukkah candles.
Yes.
Now, I know that we light our tradition is you put the Hanukkah candles in from right to left. Day one, day two, day three. But when you light from left to right.
Oh, yes.
But the others, I believe the Hasidim do it the other way around.
Okay. That's our religion. There's always people who do it the other way around. But also now, if you're talking about lighting candles, Erev Shabbos, and that's what you're going to say just now. Candle lighting's the latest time
Right.
for candle lighting. But also... Havdalah, which is the end of Shabbos.
Correct.
So I think the Ponovich Rov, who came to South Africa, he says, this is many years, we're very good with Kiddush, but we don't have much Havdalah. But, and I would say that, okay, I don't know surveys, but I think the majority of Jewish women light candles. And there's some wonderful stories. I just got an email yesterday of someone who's very, very ill, and a woman in a hospital. And I think her husband couldn't find candles, and they've managed to, some fund gave them candles, and she made the brocha. I mean, she's very, very ill, but at least she made the brocha there in the hospital on the candles. Do you know that if you by yourself, that if you're on holiday, a man by himself must also light candles.
It's
not just the woman who must land. If you live alone or you go on holiday and you're stuck somewhere, a man must light
candles. Yes.
It's, but I think because the woman symbolizes the home, she does it on behalf of the men in the home.
Right. Yeah. We're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
He's called the Walking Human Encyclopedia, but here at Chai FM, you know him as Isaac Resnick. For a nostalgic walk down memory lane, catch Isaac Resnick Friday mornings at 9 a.m. And for the lowdown in the community, be sure to stay tuned for Talk of the Town, Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 Chai FM.
So if you just tuned in, we're talking all about customs, traditions, superstitions. And I did mention the Golem in Prague. And, of course, there's been a lot of discussion about it. Did it really happen? Was it really true or not? So we'll come back to that in a few moments. Now, we've had quite a few texts. I'm going to read them to you now. We've had one that says, one superstition you left out is we don't pass salt from one person to the next. This was a Christian thing from when Judas betrayed Jesus Christ. That comes from Mike Lubo. Not walking under a ladder is practical. Something may fall on your head. That's true, because you know in the Torah it tells you when you build a house and you build a roof garden, a parapet, you've got to see that it's secure,
yeah.
So that your whoever your guest is won't fall off.
Yes.
Right? And then there's another one that says, a Jewish salt practice, throwing salt over your shoulder. If you spill salt, supposedly from when Lot's wife, I remember, looked back and she became a pillar of salt. Now, touching a mezuzah, not a superstition, one is supposed to pause and think of Hashem before going out into the world or entering your house.
Okay, so I don't think we ever mentioned that touching a mezuzah is a superstition.
We didn't mention that.
It might be seen as other people,
yes.
But it's got a deep. There's many things that we do in Judaism that if you go into it, it has a deep source, and it's usually based on a mitzvah, which comes from the Torah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this person is right, is that you should pause. I mean, there are people that just walk past.
Yeah.
But these are all visual reminders.
Right.
Lighting the candles, the menorah, you know.
And a mezuzah is actually mentioned in the Torah. Yeah.
And I see the chief rabbi's got, there's a whole drive now to get people to have kosher mezuzahs. So this is not just a superstition. This is a real part, central to Yiddishkeit.
Yes.
It
just says that you should see it on your doorposts, on your lintels.
So we do, psychologically, we do need these visual reminders.
Yeah.
Because if out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And that's a real phenomenon.
And you know, a lot of the Gentiles, they are very, very very considered when they see a mezuzah, and they would also like to know what it's about and why do we kiss a mezuzah. For example, a few weeks ago, a colleague of mine bought a new building in town, a non-Jewish colleague, and he's got a very big business there, and he asked Rabbi Hendel and myself to come to the new building and make a blessing, give a blessing. And he asked if we would put up a mezuzah. This is a non-Jewish company. He's non-Jewish. But he wanted a mezuzah. And why? He grew up in a Jewish area where he said when he went to school, if it was a yontif, he was the only Gentile in the whole school that was left. They were all Jews.
Yeah.
I can mention where it was. Yeah. And he says he always... All his friends were Jewish. Wherever he went to, ever home, all he saw was the mezuzahs on the door. They walked out of the house. They kissed the mezuzah. They came into the house. They kissed the mezuzah. And he wanted the mezuzah, he says, because it brought them luck. That's what he, you know, that's how they look at it like that.
Yeah. You see, when you talk about luck, you drifting now into superstition.
And that's superstition.
I'm not saying it's always, but... I mean,
He looked at it as it was a lucky charm.
Yeah, I think from my understanding, my view, you know, looking at life through a Torah perspective is, Gary Player was known to have said that the more he practices, the luckier he gets.
Yes.
But there is I put this in really inverted commas, is luck. And that is when you daven or whatever, the mezuzah, is opportunities come your way where your eyes open up to. And that's what I call maybe luck, is that it was there, but now that you need it and you've opened your eyes, you realize that it's there. So in business, of course, you can have the best business plan in the world, but you need a break. You know, you just need to meet somebody, you know, just in the corner, you know. And you know, we also say, the Jewish people, they say, I'll do it, bili nede.
Without a promise.
Or does Hashem with the help of
heaven. The help of God.
Because we're trying to say that we're not the balabos. We're not in control. And that's a deep, deep idea. That's not just a superficial, superstitious thing. That there is a Kodesh Baruch Hu that drives the world, created the world, continues to do it. That is extremely different to understand and bring it into you.
I want to mention something you said there. We're not in control. You know, a lot of people, something happens, and they, lahavdil, God forbid, it was not a pleasant thing that happens. Oh, they say, a mens tracht, and God lacht. A man thinks, and God is laughing. But that's completely incorrect. God does not laugh. God doesn't want to see us in pain or anything like that.
Yeah.
So to say a man's truck, a man is thinking and God's laughing, it's not true.
Yes,
absolutely not true.
Yes.
Where that came about, I don't know.
Well, that opens up a whole area of sarcasm.
Yes, correct.
And being cynical, you know, you can put up a few words, but...
Because God forbid someone passes on. Look, for example, and I'm sorry to mention this. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, that horrible accident that happened at the Yeshiva College, and unfortunately, the youngster passed away, and the funeral was this week. God is not laughing. God is crying as well. And it's not for us to know. You know, there is that certain pasuk in the Torah, the secret things belong to Hashem, the hidden things.
Yes, yes.
We are not to know. It's not for us to ask and know. Like even Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem told him, you know.
So I was learning this last night with my good friend Jeff Lever, ophthalmologist, and that, you know, there were these 50 levels of understanding, and Moshe got to 49.
Yes.
So we probably sitting at 1.1. It takes a lot of time and energy and effort to get deeper and deeper understanding, and just to at a superficial level, just to rubber. That's a superstition, and I'm really pleased that the mezuzah is not a superstition. It's got deep, deep meaning to it. Yep.
And there's a texture, Isaac. In Jewish, it's not luck, but mazel, which is more than just luck.
Yes.
It's true, because you can't actually translate that word mazel. It's like the word chutzpah. It's got a completely different connotation to have mazel and glick and brocha. That's how I put it.
Yes, so we're moving, as you know, we're moving to summer way off to Tisha B'Av. And a lot of people are saying Mazel and Glick, Mazel and Glick. But there's also this beautiful, that no Jew hasn't heard it, called Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov.
What is Mazel? It's not good luck.
It's not good luck.
That Hashem has created an opportunity and you've grabbed it and whatever. I mean, you know, the English word luck is just, I just don't like it. But mazal, the mazal, and I think that's also like where the planets line up. You know, that kind of idea that things will go well.
Well,
a lot of people when we were trying to sell a property they say may it be a good sale. May you get the price that you want. May it go smoothly. And I think that probably has been told over centuries, you know, if you've owned property. Because selling a house is not selling a lollipop. It's a complicated procedure. So this mazal, and you opened up today's session on superstition. I think they maybe I could say, without really thinking about it, as it comes to mind, is diametrically opposite. Luck is, you know, but mazal is a much deeper idea that comes from forces that we don't quite understand.
Correct,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're going to take an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Just to remind you that Shabbat comes in at 5:05 this evening. Moshe Shabbos is 5:57. The Pasha is by Halosacha. Now, we were talking all about traditions, rituals, superstitions. I've got a texture which reads as follows. Understanding the difference between superstition, religious rituals, and reality is so personal and an individual discovery.
Yeah, beautiful. From Anon. Well, Anon, thank you so much. I think that is what I'm really trying to say in this whole thing, especially superstitions, that it's understanding and differentiating what is superstition, what is ritual, and what is the raisa. In other words, comes from the Torah. And then, of course, to fit into your reality. And this, you know, I'm reading a book called The Paradox of Aging. And the paradox of aging is the only way you're going to get wisdom is through aging. It's like almost the reward of aging. And that is that just your daily experience of and getting deeper and deeper understanding, you come to a point of wisdom, which you don't get in books and you don't get just by studying it. It's through experience and discussion and debate and listening to reflections of the past.
You know, I always tell everybody I've got one degree that you can only get at one university. And my degree is called QEB. And people say to me, what is QEB? And I said, it's called Qualified by Experience.
Yes, yes.
And that university is called the University of Life.
Yes.
That's
yes.
The only place.
Yes.
You know, when you see a scholar, you stand up for him, you show respect. But for an elderly person who may not have gone to university, who may not have had that education that you've got or something, you've got to stand up for him and show him because he's got life experience. Yeah.
So that just goes back to my memory now. About 2 months ago, we spoke about Rabbi Kurtzluck, and he's back for a week, and he was at our home last night, and he's got a tradition that's going on over 50 years. He's been teaching Gomorrah on a Thursday night, and he decided to bring the class to our house. And if we just link that with modern technology, they were Skyping it to different people around the world this year. So here he was sitting in our house of Beth Din, and with his Talmidim around him, but beaming it to around the world. Yeah, you know, this understanding is a beautiful idea. With my my program, I'm probably going to spend the rest of my life on personal brain management, is that you can go out into life, and whatever you're doing, it whether it's dancing or listening to music or chazonas or listening here or reading, just that, what they call neuroplastic experience. In other words, this is the major find in the last 30 years. In neuroscience, that your brain keeps changing according to experience and what you give it. So put yourself in the right context. Let's say going to shul, davening there, listening to a drosha, listening to a tape, reading the newspaper, having debates, listening to music, dancing, all this, all stimulate the brain. And it's never too old to keep your brain active and moving and strengthening. And what we've got here, just to finish off, is just we'll finish off in a few minutes, is this understanding takes time. You can learn the facts quickly, but only with age and much experience can you really truly understand what reality is and what superstition is and what a ritual is and what reality is.
Right. Right. Now, just to remind the listeners that on Sunday afternoon I have the Art of the Cantor, and I've just received a beautiful new CD from a cousin who was in Netherlands, Holland, now living in Israel, Daniel Koltoff. So I'm going to play that. It's really absolutely superb. So that's between 4 and 5. We have the Talk of the Town next Tuesday morning between 9 and 10. And, of course, next Friday, being a public holiday, we're still going to have the Reflections of the Past. And Jonathan Mock and myself will be in the studio. But I'm also going to talk about the late Dr. Melville Edelstein, because remember the 1976 riots? He was in Soweto and he was killed there. He was a social worker, and he did such a lot for that community, but unfortunately most of the youth didn't know about it. So I'm going to dedicate the program to Dr. Melville Edelstein.
Okay. From my side, I would like to thank you, Isaac, because you've made me 15 beautiful CDs. And this is a tradition where, as I said, we are moving out of a home that joined with my in-laws for 30 years now. And we found some old LPs, which I gave to you. And you converted them beautifully into CDs. I've got 15. So I've got a lot of listening to do in my motor car. And, this idea of reflections on the past. And, some people, what I'm hearing on the street and when I'm at people's homes about this show is they catch 5 or 10 minutes. So I think it's a good idea to keep repeating stuff, my understanding as I get older now is that the more you reflect on the past and you understand the past, the more you can stretch into the future.
Right.
I know you'll have the final word on this.
Right.
And this is what I love about psychiatrists will call these sessions, but these interviews, is that the more we understand our traditions, which is our past, the richer our lives become in the present, the more we can stretch into the future.
If you don't know your past, you don't have a future.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you, Craig, for controlling. Go well. Have a wonderful Shabbat. Don't forget, dress warm and enjoy the rest of the week.